Comic Book Legion podcast. I am one of your hosts, Clay, of course. I haven't been here in a while. Well, I mean a while, but I mean, really it's just been 1 week. But I'm rambling because I don't know what to say, but I have another host. How you doing, Mark?
Pretty good, man. How was Disney?
It was fun. It was more fun than I thought it would be. You know, because the one big thing is that, well, I never thought this until my wife brought it up. When I first met my wife, I told her that sometime in the next 5 years, which we almost did it, it's been 6 years, but in the next 5 years, we have to go to Disney World. And she's like, why? We don't have any kids. And I was like, how dare you?
You know? You can't go to a theme park if you don't have kids?
But she was okay with, like, going to Six Flags or, you know, going to places like that. And she didn't want to go to SeaWorld because that Netflix documentary, Blackfish or whatever.
Yeah.
I've worked at SeaWorld. All of that is fake, just to let you know. It's all freaking... They skewed some of the footage. I knew one guy that actually was in the Blackfish
documentary. Oh, I mean, I didn't really. I didn't buy it either. I mean, I still go to SeaWorld all the time. I love SeaWorld.
But I told her, I was like, we have to go to Disney World. And then, you know, over the years or whatever, we finally were like, we need to go on vacation. And so when we decided this, she was the one that decided it. And I was like, are you real? Or like, are you serious? Like, should I get excited about this? Or are you just tricking me? And so when we finally started to plan everything and pay for everything up front, I was like so excited. And then a little part of me was like, I'm 27 years old. Am I really going to have that much fun? Oh my God. I was a kid that entire time.
Well, I mean, that's what they sell you on. They sell all the people that are there. I mean, you remember, you see it like, wow, I'm a 7-year-old again. Watching Disney, watching the cartoons. It's an awesome place to go to. The whole kid thing. Okay, don't take photo ops with princesses. But the rest, I mean, you can love it.
Mark, I took those photo ops with the princesses, okay? I had lunch at Cinderella's Castle, and it was the best food that was in the entire place.
Oh, dude, you did
place.
That with the characters? Every time we wanted to, or I've been to Disney like 80 times, and I've never been able to do it. Maybe because we've never booked it so far in advance that dinner inside the castle is always, it's already like booked.
I will tell you, we ate at the Animal Kingdom buffet. We ate at the Japan, Tokyo in Epcot. We ate at Hollywood Studios. The best food in that entire place was Cinderella's castle.
I mean, you would hope so. It's a freaking castle.
It was so good. But whenever I think of my trip and how much of a doofus I look like, just like in awe of everything, there's one picture that we got with Goofy. I have my Goofy hat on, and he's like playing with his ears to like show me that, you know, he has ears too. And I have like this stupid smile on my face. And the camera guy caught it, and I look at it every once in a while on my phone because it's through the Disney World app or whatever, and we still have to purchase those photos. We have like 40 days to do it. But I look at that and I'm like, dude, I look like such an idiot because of how happy I am at looking at. But it was
See, this is we're gonna. You know what? You and me, we're gonna do a play by play when the Mr. Rogers movies comes out. We're going to review it, because I think you need to be happy. What's wrong with being happy?
I'm okay with being happy. It's just like, I don't know. I think that was the most genuine smile I had at Disney World, though. I will tell you that.
That sounds nice.
It does.
I've never seen somebody be upset for being happy. I mean, you don't have to look at it, but I mean, you were happy. Jeez.
I think it's because of how hardened this... Like, I think it's because of Bendis. Like, in my years.
What a... Dude, that's the greatest transition I have ever... Good lord, dude. This is what, episode 23? That's professional right there. Good lord. That's amazing. Jeez.
But I
like, right, you're blaming Bendis and you didn't even read the freaking book. You looked at pictures.
I know.
Well, I mean, hey, Ivan Reis on Superman 14. It's a beautiful book to look at.
It really is. There was some panels that I was like, oh, that looks really, really cool. I was kind of not looking forward to reading it anyway because of how much dialogue I thought I saw. There was just a lot going on, even in the art that, you know, I was looking at. So I was just like, I don't know if I want to read this.
It was actually a really, I don't know if because of expectations, when you're going into a Brian Michael Bendis book, you are expecting to read an entire newspaper just for one comic. So I know that that's usually the case. This book actually flew by. This really? Was actually a really, really fast read. Yes, it looks very busy, but there's not that much dialogue. So it feels like one of those books that you can finish really quickly. And so, yeah, Superman 14, I'll just run through it real quick, by Brian Michael Bendis. Ivan Reis is on pencils, Joe Prado, and Eau Claire Albert on inks, Alex Sinclair on colors, Wes Abbott on letters. This was pretty much Superman and his squad going, now they're in the ruins of Metropolis, and they are now going to all of the high elders who have always been kind of, I guess you could say, from every planet, every constellation, everything.
It's the ruins of Krypton. You said ruins of Metropolis.
Sorry. Well, whatever. It's all synonymous. Anyways, yeah, so with the ruins of Krypton, they're talking to all the High Elders. This is kind of like, I guess you could say, a callback to that issue where Jor-El was trying to... You know when they did that flashback right before Krypton was destroyed?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And Jor-El was talking to Aliaba, that guardian... Freaking A. I forgot who were there, but there was like four or five elders, and he was trying to get them, but everything was clouded in secrecy. This is Superman and Kara, Jonathan, and you have Zod and his family pretty much approach the elders, kind of in a way being influenced by Jonathan, kind of saying, well, you know, like in back in our planet, we have like what's the United Nations kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it was like he was kind of like the one that just thought of it. And Superman, yes, they have some flashbacks in regards to how did they get to this point and how they ended up, at least from what we're seeing, which is defeating the Rogel Czar part. To me, the Rogel Czar part has gotten so annoying that it's worth skipping. Just know that pretty much the way they were able to defeat him, at least to this point, is really because, as we know, Rogel Czar and Zod were working together to go against Superman. But when Zod realized that he actually took him to, that Rogel Czar took Zod to the ruins, they're actually in just the ruins of Krypton, his home, he got furious. And that's when he decided to team up with Superman, and they just freaking destroyed him. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what happened. So now they're pretty much going back to like the first panel. That's kind of like how this book is ending, which is Superman saying, no, we are going to start, which is kind of like the United Planets, or I don't know what it is. I don't remember what the name was. United Planet, United Galaxies, something like that. And he's like, we are no longer going to be, we're no longer going to be hiding in secrecy. We're all going to be working together. If somebody has an issue, we're going to bring it over to everybody else, and we're going to find ways that all of us can kind of help each other. So it looks like the whole Unity saga, everything that Brian Michael Bendis was like starting from the very beginning, it looks like this huge, very long story arc that has, you know, spanned through pretty much even like the Man of Steel mini, the 6-issue mini, was Jonathan coming up with this idea to get everyone, pretty much all the cosmic entities, to work together so that we don't have another Krypton disaster. No more secrets. Let's work together. And right when that part was going to happen and they were going to kind of like get a verdict, that's when we see the Legion of Superheroes come up and say, this day is the day to remember, because this is when the whole world and like the future has grown like towards like for the better. So because of that, they came back because they wanted to you know, spread gift and kind of give their, let them know that what they've done was the right thing. And mm-hmm. that's when you get, it kind of bothers me that they literally show the end of this book was the preview that was like spoiled.
Yeah, I don't know if that.
I don't know if DC revealed it, but I feel like someone leaked it, and I don't know if maybe they were just saying like, oh, they had to embrace it because it was already out there. But it did kind of suck that this book ended with the way that you saw it a week earlier, because it when and I saw it, this, I
that's
felt
basically I, one. Let's hear, one, two, yeah, two whole pages. You know, one's a splash page. So it'll be a double splash, and then one other page at the very end. I don't like that at all when that happens. You know, I mean, there was they changed the art. We just talked about this before we started recording. They changed the ethnicity of Lightning Lad, but that's basically it. So other than that, there was no real surprise for these last pages of the book.
Yeah. So I when I saw that, I was like, okay. Like, I get it. Like, I liked the premise. Like, I like what they were doing. I even loved seeing, I'm like, wow, like seeing Zod and Superman working together. As a Superman fan, that's something that you rarely or you never really see. And it felt genuine what Zod was doing. Cause even there was this moment where a decision needed to be made and Zod is not the one who made it. He asked Clark, what should we do? Like there was a cool moment between them that you're like, oh snap. Like, Zod's actually asking Superman, like, what do we do next? Like, I thought it was nice because I think he finally realized, you know, like, no, enough is enough. When he was saying, he's like, time to stop living in lies, Jaxer, when he started going up against Rogozar. So I like those moments, I was like, oh, wow, nice. Sweet, Bendis. I liked it. I just did not like that what I was spoiled with like a week and a half ago is the ending of a book. I would have preferred something after, because it doesn't really feel like a tease anymore. I'm like, okay, I was teased a week and a half ago with an ending of a book, which is crummy. But
one thing I did notice, because I'm skimming through this thing while you're talking, the last thing you see of Rogozar, he's just like bleeding out, but there is no panel where he is like arrested or captured or anything. So I really hope that Bendis doesn't bring him back to like, oh, I'm finally going to, you know, defeat you, L, and just be super boring again, because I feel like this story was way too drawn out. Like you said in the very beginning of this book, though, he does like to play the long game. In retrospect of the miniseries plus this series here, that's 20 issues. Man of Steel was weekly. I just felt that, you know, with it being weekly, that's 1 month. So a total of 15 months to tell this story. Did it really need that? I don't think so. But I am looking at the last few pages, and in retrospect of what you were talking about with Zod and Superman finally coming to terms to, hey, you know, we can finally, you know, make things better and, you know, be at peace, basically. I think it could be kind of cool. You know, Zod always was the kind of person to bring back Krypton or to make a new Krypton or to fix Krypton. And in some way, he could have his cake and eat it too in this situation.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's actually the panel. I mean, if you're reading it digitally, I think it's like page 18 digitally when he was finally reunited with his son and Ursa.
Yeah.
And they were talking about, like, oh, all the battles all over the galaxy. And he's like, hey, what do we do, L? Like, I like that. I don't know why, but that to me was the coolest part of this issue. Something as subtle as, because you know their history. So knowing that two people, like, just two enemies going up against each other all this time, and for someone with the ego of Zod, I thought it was... I loved it. So I thought it was really great. I mean, Ivan Reis's art and the colors and the inks are all great. I think that this was a really strong issue by Bendis. Me personally. Now, leading into his other issue, which was Action Comics 1014, which was again by Brian Michael Bendis. And man, are you good with pronouncing names? Simon Kudransky? Am I saying that right?
Kudransky.
Okay. Now I actually wanted to give a shout out to one of our contributors, Aaron. Because Aaron actually did something that, I mean, I don't really see a lot of people like talk about, which is actually Bendis' Action Comics, like his teasers. And it looked like Aaron started joining on the Bendis hate because of his version of Warner Brothers, like Pictures wins a bidding war over blue and gold script.
Oh, yeah. Nah. And, you know, Kevin actually messaged me privately on Twitter. I'm going to call you out, Kevin. I'm sorry. But he's like, well, actually, I think a Bendis-led blue and gold book would be actually pretty cool. And I was like, no.
Wait, he posted that on the chat, though? Or did he do that later?
He did it later. He said that it was so good, and then he messaged me privately and was like, well, I just think that with Bendis's writing, you might like it a little bit more because of how Booster Gold and Blue Beetle are together. And it's more of the fact that I will have more jokes like we had in this book that don't have any contextual reason or just fall flat on their face, those yeah. jokes. And I don't like those jokes. I think he just like, oh, this is a really intense moment. I think that we need to have an audience laugh button. Here's this joke. And it never works out. Whenever I see it, whenever I read it, it just doesn't feel like organic in the conversation. So it just yeah. puts me in a completely different like frame of mind or in a different mood for what the conversation is.
All right. So considering that happened maybe midway through the book, which I know we're going to talk about it. What did you think about the beginning, which was, you know, Miss Leone kind of like putting more of her stamp inside the Daily Planet? I mean,
I was waiting for this moment. I think everybody was waiting for this moment for her to finally, you know, kind of play the Clark Kent to, you know, Clark Kent to Superman. You know, Miss mm-hmm. Leone has her invisible mafia. She has all this going on in Metropolis. But it sounds like she's a pretty powerful person with a lot of money. It's really yep. hard to just see her as a mysterious character that's never going to show up, you know, in anywhere. Sorry, I just bumped into my desk. But we were all waiting for this moment. I don't want to say I hated this conversation, but I don't think I liked it.
In regards to what, though?
In regards of how Perry White was kind of acting, like some of the comments he made. And for somebody who is all powerful, has all this money and everything else, and to just say, oh, I don't care about anything except for clicks. Like, I'm sorry. I know that that's what this generation is about, but it's not what the Daily Planet is. And she kind of goes back to like saying, oh, I want the Daily Planet back to where it was instead of gossip, but she wants clicks. So it's kind of contradicting itself in that aspect. And so I just felt the conversation was.
But in terms of she wants the clicks, but she wants it for real stories. That's why she doesn't want gossip. And she's like, what are the real? It's kind of just like with Perry back in the day, just wanted Lois to do a Superman piece because Superman, even though it was a legitimate story, it was that garnered clicks. So that's the way I took it. I figured, like, if she was more like, forget about Leviathan, forget about Red Cloud, forget about Invincible Mop, and forget about that, and let's push gossip, then okay, then I'm like, and Perry was willing to go, oh, man, let's do it. Yes, oh, give me the money. Then, you know what, Perry, whoa, this dude's a freaking fraud, or Bendis is, well, I mean, we would put it more on Bendis for ruining Perry White. Here, it's more like, we want to get back to what you want to do, which is real stories, the important stories. What do you need? So I think, I mean, I know what you mean, how it can be hypocritical, but I think that what, and her way of expressing clicks, it was for, you know, things that mattered.
But also, one thing that I want to point out, has there been any real coverage in these Leviathan books and in Action or any of the tie-ins that shows that the media and civilians know about Leviathan at all?
No, not really.
So why is Leone going to Perry White asking who is Leviathan?
I believe because she doesn't know who Leviathan is. And she's already been threatened in a sense by that mysterious dude. Like at the beginning, I think it was Leviathan Rising or something. So I actually think she wants to put her resources on that because she hasn't been able to figure out who Leviathan is. And if she can get a Lois Lane to get her hands on it, she might be able to get those answers that she's been looking for. Which is why I feel like maybe that Lois Lane comic, after doing its little social commentary that it's doing right now, I feel like it could potentially get to that.
I almost forgot about the conversation that Leone had with...
I don't remember the dude, but a dude.
No. Robinson Good had a conversation with the multiple personality chick. I forgot her name.
Rose
and Thorn. Yeah,
Rose
yeah.
and Thorn, yeah.
And she talked about Leviathan, and Robinson Good got the story about Leviathan. So, I understand why. Because in my mind, I was like, nobody knows about Leviathan. Like, civilians don't know about Leviathan. So why would Leone go to Perry White, who has no clue about Leviathan, say, who is Leviathan? I thought Perry's reaction would be like, well, I don't know who the hell is Leviathan. And they would just go on this conversation of, I don't know who. Because I feel like that's kind of a Bendis thing to do. But they felt, you know, like they knew about Leviathan as a whole, and so they started the whole conversation. But now since I backtracked with that whole conversation with Robinson Good and Thorn, and now it makes a little bit more sense. The next part here, you know, Perry White, there's no TV in the room that you can see. You can see one in the background barely, or is that a portrait? I can't tell. But he says, damn, the TV people got him first. And it shows, you know, Star Labs and Superman fighting this giant monster.
Yeah.
This is where the joke comes around and the kind of jerkish attitude or, like, not even jerkish. It's more like, I don't know. But the joke that I was talking about is, you know, this monster's down and out. He's unconscious. And this guy in a hazmat suit just says, I just peed. That's all he says.
And Superman's like, really? Like, twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because of the conversation, it says, oh, you'll have to, oh boy, speak to our supervisor. Superman says, really? And the guy says, oh, I just peed. And then Superman says, really? Like, Is he saying that the guy is scared of Superman, so he peed, or did he, the joke doesn't land, it doesn't make any sense, so, I know what you mean
in the sense that it just seems that every single time he's trying to throw humor, it's usually, like, bathroom humor that doesn't always hit, or he... it really bothers you the way that he has written Oliver, using like slang and shush nerd, and you know yo bat thing or whatever he said in the latest. So I know what you mean. Yeah, and I mean I don't know. Like I saw it. Like should it be there? No. Does it bother? No. Is it stupid? Yes, but. It's like one of those things, like, it's stupid, but it's like, I just go right through it. So, I guess it really, it depends, like, what you look for and in like, the book. The part that I was actually, I think, man, I don't remember if it was Aaron or Josh, so, I apologize, but I know on our group chat, he was mentioning that it kind of felt like Superman was speaking as in a, do you know who I am kind of thing. Like, he felt, like, very, like, authoritative, like, somebody... And I was struggling trying to figure out when that happened in the book.
That's kind of what I was looking at also, because I'm kind of reading over the dialogue. And it does kind of sound like when you're reading the dialogue for Superman, he's asking questions, which I feel like anybody would, because there's a giant freaking monster and, you know, Star Labs is apparently, you know, behind this, but they didn't have it under control or whatever. So I could see Superman being kind of annoyed at the situation. And so he's kind of demanding and things like that. But I didn't see any direct dialogue that would kind of be authoritative like that.
Yeah, like, I thought him, like, he was very stern in this moment. I mean, the dude just finished fighting a monster. I mean, I think sometimes we forget, like, what just happened. And, of course, it's happening next to this lab. Mysterious person showing up on the tablet trying to talk, you know, trying to get this information. And, I mean, Clark, from what, I mean, what we do know about Superman is, even though they might not show it, we do know that he can sense people.
Yeah.
He can hear heartbeats, so he can know everything that's going on in his surrounding. And it kind of just felt like he knew he was being played. So that's why I actually love the close-ups when you see him, like, starting to use his X-ray vision.
And I will say, and I am sorry for anybody who enjoys this art, the close-up on his eyes is unfortunately the best panel in this entire book.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is my favorite panel, because I was like, whoa, that was very well done. Because I was actually annoyed by, and I think this is the same artist that did a couple of issues. I don't know if he, like, disappeared, but he came back where Superman had, like, 8 different faces.
Yeah, and he had, like, a weird nose and everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is the same artist. I will give him kudos on that, on this panel.
Well, because if you look at the panels where Superman is talking to the hazmat guys and the girl on the tablet, the colors and inks don't look complete. Like, he pops out of the entire panel.
Yeah, it's something, I think it's something with, like, the shading or whoever does maybe, like, the inks. But it does, I mean, it does look off.
Yeah.
So, leaving there, Clark Kent is back, he's writing his article, and this is when he gets to meet Miss Leone. And this was another interesting conversation, something similar to what we got with Perry White. It's kind of like now Miss Leone is now starting to meet the Trinity of, like, the Daily Planet. So, we know for sure that sooner or later we're going to be getting Lois Lane. And this was all about, what do you think you're worth?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, what do you mean? He's like, well, how can I make your job in life easier? Like, you know, are they paying you well here? He's like, well, I'm a journalist. He's like, nah. So I think, like, the part with Perry when he's like, where did you come from, Miss Leone? He's like, I think heaven. I find it for Perry meeting Miss Leone for the first time, and just because she's throwing a whole bunch of really good stuff, you would think an editor of a newspaper is going to be one of the most cynical people in alive. And the fact that he is completely gushing over her feels a little off. Now, I would love to see maybe later on Perry is actually just playing this because he's, you know, maybe there's something there where he's doing his own little acting and stuff like that. But I don't think so.
Well, so it would, to act would still be out of character for Perry White. And I know
even so, yes.
I know this is the owner of the Daily Planet, but Perry White has always been that hard-ass character that, okay, when they finally meet, he's going to have questions. He's going to say, hey, what's going on? Why are we doing this? You know, why haven't we, you know, budget plans and things like that. He would go in there full force and be like, okay, this is still my planet. This is how we're going to run it. And then that's that.
Yes.
But
now, from leaving there, because there's, like, one panel where you're seeing kind of, like, again, the confrontation between Robinson Good as Red Cloud and Rosenthorne. Did she, like, provide some power to, like, did she give some of her power to Rose? Like, am I understanding that? Because she kind of said something like, this is something that you've been looking for or craving or something in that regards, like, if you want to know what it is,
I think like, it's more of like, look at me, look at all this power I have. This is what you've always wanted, you know, kind of thing. Like showing off.
So it was more taunting. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think she gave her any kind of power.
Okay. I gotcha.
And I think that in the end, right here, where it has her like smoke coming out of her eyes and mouth and everything, I think they killed Rose.
Okay. I think, yeah, yeah. I can kind of see that now. Now yeah. that I'm looking it over.
Yeah.
Then after that, Clark meets up with Lois. They're talking about the mysterious person who is Miss Leon. Oh, did you tell her I'm on assignment? Ba 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 ba. You know, they're just having like a little random conversation, and then that leads to the ending of this book, where there looks like there is a lightning strike, kind of like a lightning storm going outside. Lois is like, "Oh, is it John?" He's like, "Oh, well, there's a person in there," so he's like, "I gotta go." And we find out that lo and behold, Naomi has finally met Superman, and she needs his help, and that's how it ends. And you know, I'm really curious. And you know, I gotta say something in regards to the colors, because I know that we're kind of like bashing the colors a little bit, because of, I wonder how much is it where, because I mean, yes, the Simon Kudransky is doing the artist, but the colorist is Brad Anderson. And I mean, Brad Anderson, I mean, look at Doomsday Clock.
I was just
I mean, yeah. Look at his stuff with like Jason Fabok. I mean, the dude is a stud in his coloring. So it kind of makes me wonder, based on, because I don't see an inker. So I'm kind of putting it as here, where maybe Kudransky's also the inker. And, you know, when you can only provide colors to what's not shaded. So yeah. I'm wondering maybe if that's something. Or, I mean, Brad Anderson is totally mailing it in here because he has the much bigger books to worry about. I don't know. I don't want to think that, you know, because that's kind of like going against his integrity and stuff, and I don't want to do that. But I don't know, man, because it kind of does throw me off that it is Brad Anderson, and his colors are gorgeous.
Just that, like, I think that last panel could have been a lot better just with the way the art is. Like, Naomi doesn't have a nose. She doesn't have a nose.
Oh, like, hold on. Really? Man, I just thought, I was like, oh, it's Naomi, and then I didn't, like pay attention.
Like, you have to really, I had to zoom in to see her nose, like, if at all.
Oh, wow, yeah. It's very, yeah, it is very light. I mean, I think it's also maybe with us getting review copies and, you know, that well, it like, could be a little blocked.
I mean,
but, you would think it's a little bit more noticeable.
Yeah, but even I'm zooming in to, like, the nth degree here. And even so, like, it's very, very light.
No, I hear you. You should be able to tell that there's a nose.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I will say that I think DC Comics has made a change for Action Comics 1015. And this was something that Kevin shared to me. I saw later that he posted it on our Slack chat as well. But I think they made a good choice by getting even though, yes, Del Otto is an amazing artist, does awesome covers. But I will say that the one that they replaced it with, which I actually posted on my Twitter at Mark Reads Comics from Lucio.
Is that the one he shared yesterday?
Yeah, the Lucio Parrillo. bro, I went so Latin there because I don't want to say like Lucio Parrillo. So I'm Lucio Parrillo. I mean, I loved it. And it was funny because you put, like, the throw-up. So I'm like, dude, come on. This is awesome. He's like, oh, I don't want to see Jada Pinkett Smith.
No, I think I didn't do the throw-ups. I think I did the
Eye roll?
Yeah, the eye roll.
Okay, the eye roll. So I think the barf was for something else above. Because I feel like whatever Kevin posts, you just automatically put a throw-up sign. Yeah, so then I saw the sign, and you were like, oh, I don't want to see Jada Pinkett Smith. And it was funny, because all I thought, I'm like, man, that looks like Lauryn Hill from Sister Act. Anyways, I really liked the cover. I thought it was really nice, and I think it's an upgrade compared to what we were going to get for those who love collecting B covers like I do. So let's jump into, which is a pretty huge book, which is Justice League 30, because this is the Justice Doom War. It has begun by Scott Snyder, James Tynion. You have George Jimenez. Oh, I miss him on art because
Was so good to have him back.
Yeah, and Alejandro Sanchez is on colors with Tom. Oh, geez. I'm just going to say Napoleon ice cream. Tom Napolitano is doing letters. Yeah, man, I missed it. I really missed his art. And right when I saw, I don't care because I'm kind of buying now that his art is very influenced by anime and kind of like that. So even by seeing a Lex Luthor where his anatomy is kind of wonky, I don't even care because I'm buying like what his inspiration is. And I
But you also have to remember that Lex Luthor at this point has Martian abilities, so that anatomy can just be switched out because of the shape-shifting. That's what I kind of tossed
okay.
it up to.
Well, I mean, yeah, since now he is like that apex predator. So, yes, I'm all for it, and I'm digging it. This story to me as crazy, I was like, whoa, I actually thought I missed a comic.
Because same of the way it started. Here, the way
I was like,
it opened,
freaking A.
I was
I'm like, oh my gosh,
crap.
I didn't read Justice League Dark. Was it an Odyssey? I was panicking. I was like, I missed the whole thing and I just spoiled it. Luckily, this was a vision. Oh, and Perpetua, what an amazing design.
Oh, dude, that one page right before it reveals that it's just like a vision or whatever, that last panel, that I think it's just like a splash page with a panel on top.
Yeah.
So good. Oh my gosh.
She is terrifying. I love it. Absolutely. Is that like, you see like around her neck? Is that kind of like just worlds that she has created, or like, does that look like a galaxy like around her neck?
Oh, snap. I did not even notice that. Holy cow.
Yeah, I was, wow. When I was looking at it, I was like, dude, is that like Mars, Saturn? Like, does she have, it's kind of like, instead of like he's got the whole world in his hands, it's kind of like, she's got the world by her freaking throat, you know? It's like, it's right there. Kind of like in a reference to, like, you know, you speak.
You know, I mean, like, see, people like diamonds and pearls. Perpetua likes galaxies. That's what it is.
She's got galaxies, bro. K-Julius can provide that. yeah, so when I saw that cover, I mean, that splash, I was like, awesome. Then, boom, Starman is revealing kind of like what he saw, how there's no chance. Justice, and then the Justice League, you know, Superman pretty much knights everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone and their mama who can fight. You are now, at this moment, part of the Justice League. Get ready for war.
Hey, did you notice that Swamp Thing, like, read the Aquaman book and was like, I need that look?
I mean, he looked.
Like, if you look at Swamp Thing in this splash page...
I mean, it looks like Aquaman was infected by the green.
Yeah, basically.
I dig it. I like it. I mean, actually, one thing that I will notice, because I know that we've always kind of talked about... that we always talk about, like, continuity and how things don't really, like, bother me as much. I want to say it's Comic Steve on Twitter that he was kind of posting, because there were some things in regards to this book... where he's noticed some characters in these splash pages, this one and then the villain one that you see later on. And he's like, oh, I've noticed that you have this person here as a hero or just drawn here as a hero, but this person in another comic book that has the Year of the Villain banner, he looks completely different. And, you know, some people were kind of like agreeing, others were. I'm like, you know, and they were kind of like, Snyder, if you're the architect, you should know those things. And I'm like, I mean, come on. Snyder, yes, he's the architect of the story, and you know what, editorial and stuff like that, they're the ones that also bring up, like, hey, would you want these stories? Because all the other stuff that really have the Year of the Villain banner, it's really only there just to throw Luthor at the end, and they know that that helps with struggling
that
books
is true.
With sales.
And I see one character in particular that he might be talking about.
And he was actually talking about here, which was Jericho. And the reason why it was Jericho, because here you actually see Jericho in his hero look. But then when they go to the villain, you actually see Jericho in his villain. So you're in literally the same book. You're seeing the same character twice, both good and bad.
I did not know. That's hilarious.
So then for me, I was like, okay, you know what? The other stuff I don't really make a big deal on. That one's pretty bad. and I even said it because I was one of the ones that were not arguing, just saying, like, you know, I don't really think that that's a big deal. This one, okay, that one's pretty bad. Like, that one, you gotta, that one, like, come on, step it up, because that's a little odd. And there are some fans that are actually going to look at the deeper parts to see if they see, like, a character. Because everyone has different characters that they like. And, you know, some are just really interested to see if they'll find a character that they haven't seen in a while, just kind of get thrown in there to say that they were
Animal
there.
Man.
Sorry, you broke up. Who would you say?
Oh, right behind Swamp Thing is Animal Man.
Oh, give me my buddy Baker.
See, the thing is, in these splash pages, since Snyder has been writing, I have seen Animal Man like two or three times, and he has not been in Rebirth whatsoever.
Make his grand entrance against Grodd. He's just a huge gorilla, and it's going to be Kong versus Kong. I mean, that's just going to happen.
Amazing. That would be amazing.
So, Starman now has to, I guess, in an easy way, pretty much explain all the crap that has happened and what Perpetua is. And, you know,
he's mansplaining to everybody in the Justice League right now.
Okay, sure. and they kind of mentioned that with Luther having, I think they said, like, six of the essences of the totality, there is one that's here that we have, which is in this, like, a shard of it, is in the Cosmic Rod, which was a really cool nod. I was really happy when I saw that Cosmic Rod. After that, honestly, all I felt was I was watching, what's his name, Scott Lang, explain to the Avengers on how they can get the stones back so that they can defeat Thanos. So then the book 100, it just, I was like, I didn't even finish the book, and I'm like, why am I reading Endgame in Justice League?
Yeah, it was very, like,
that was two on the nose. That was like, wow, that's like pretty.
The concept was fun, of course. Time travel is always a big thing for people. But yeah, it's very much an Endgame type of storyline.
Yeah, and I think it was just because it was too, I don't know, maybe just because Endgame happened this year. Because, I mean, yes, I mean, that stuff happens a lot in the time travel. Like, oh, going here and going there. I don't know why. It just, all I thought was Endgame. Yeah. Instead of just, like, regular time travel-y stuff. Because it just felt like, oh, we need to go to the future. We need to go to the past. We need to collect it. And we cannot fail once, because if we do, we die. You know, it was just like, it was too similar.
Yeah, that whole Batman line. If we fail here, or what did he say? He says, if we fail here, we lose. If we fail in the future, we lose. If we fail in the past, we lose. Basically, we lose. And I was like, okay, Batman.
Yeah, like, so.
And even Guy was like, thanks for the pep talk, Bats. Like,
yeah, so I was like, okay, all right, well, let's see what happens. Then, of course, I love the fact that, yes, of course, because of the Starro, the Jarro fragments, it's there. Luther knows exactly what they're doing and that they were able to mess with it. The one that I was most excited to see in all of this is I really wanted to see, I believe it was Mera and Hawkgirl, who are going with the World Forger and the Monitor to find Anti-Monitor. I just want to see the Anti-Monitor's reveal. I want to see him come back.
I think it'll be just as big as the Anti-Monitor reveal in, like, Blackest Night, where you're not expecting it whatsoever.
I wasn't going to be like, the big one with me was the Sinestro Corps War. Oh my gosh. But yes, I hear you. I mean, having an Anti-Monitor like zombie is never cool. So that's one team. The other one I think that a lot of people were really interested in, because again, this was another really, really big reveal. Because I think it was the Trinity went one. I think they were going to the future. Then you had Hawkgirl and Mera were going with World Forger and the Monitor. And Jon Stewart and Barry were going to the past. And when they realized that, you know, like, whoa, something happened in here. And it's because of that fragment that kind of came and mumbled and jumbled and everything got screwed up. Because, of course, the villains already knew the plan.
There's a hooded figure.
Isn't that like a fragment? Because I felt like Luther was mentioning that, look, because of the Starro, like, fragments or something, like, it's really just like a little disfigured hooded creature looking thing, but it was really.
But I don't know, because it actually speaks. Like, there's a moment where Superman and Hot Girl are talking, and you see it, and they say, okay, well, let's, you know, get to it. And that hooded figure is like, yes, let's. And then when they're actually jumping through the portals and everything.
Well, I mean, don't like starfish, like, if they cut a limb, another one can grow. So it could be in a sense where, you know, you cut off a little fragment and maybe in its own comic book Jarro version, it's just something that can speak. And maybe that's why it's so disfigured.
That would be interesting. I think the reveal for this character will be in next issue. But I was interested. I'm interested to see who it is.
Yeah. So
If it's somebody important.
So going to the future, I mean, the Trinity were in the Days of Future Past, and they're fighting freaking, like, Sentinels.
Sentinels, yep.
Which was it's cool. Like, it's a cool nod. Like, I thought they looked really cool. And they got to meet Commandy, which, holy crap.
Dude, Commandy is one scrawny kid in this book. Like, every Commandy book that I have seen, or art-wise, he's a small kid, but he's very ripped. This dude just looks very lanky. Yep. You guys screwed us over. Thanks.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think that I find that more towards, like, you know what, George's style. Because nobody that he really draws look, even like Superman. Superman just looks like, he looks bulky, but he doesn't look like he's cut or anything.
Oh, that's true.
So I think that that's kind of like more his style. But when I saw the reveal of Commandy, I actually got more excited for the reveal that we actually got at the end. And I think it's, again, another reason, because we were kind of spoiled on Twitter, which was, yes, I know that Snyder has mentioned that he will be introducing the Justice League of America. And, dude, when I saw the Justice League of America, I was really happy, because to see Jay Garrick, to see Alan Grant, oh, my gosh, like, this was, I was like, oh, Terry Dodd, oh, Kent Nelson, oh, God, you know, like, I got pumped.
So
but,
do you think...
But I feel like Twitter freaking ruined it for me.
Oh, yeah. No, this...
I hate that these things are ruining, like, the element of surprise. It drives me nuts.
Well, I'm going to call out... I'm sorry. I'm going to call out Kevin. He posts the...
Dude, you're Justice never going to record with him again if you keep on calling him out.
I'm sorry. But the he posted the... I know that Snyder posted it, but I think a lot of people, not just Kevin, I'm going to call out everybody who is listening to this, who actually does this... I think if a creator posts it, they're like, okay, cool, I can post it wherever I want. And, I mean, yes and no. I mean, that's the same thing as, like, people who don't want to hear any type of line that's in a show. Like Kevin, you know, the other day when I was like, oh, yeah, this is what happens in Young Justice. And I barely said anything about the dialogue. And he's like, oh, well, that spoiled for me. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I mean, sorry. But... I think a lot of people see it as, oh, if a creator shares it, then it's safe to share it anywhere else. But I saw the picture where, and it's more, because this is Francis Manapul at this point. The art that was shared from Snyder, I believe it was Jimenez art with the Justice League
probably,
of America.
Yeah, probably. That's probably going to be in issue 31 where they're all kind of like revealing their names.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it's a cool page, but I would have liked it a lot better to see it firsthand when I read it.
Yeah, I mean, and that goes with it. That's why, you know, sometimes just being too inside, I think, kind of kills the buzz of anything that could be surprising. And I think, like, I feel like it would have been ruined if that epic Justice League 25 and you saw, like, the, you know, that huge thing with Superman sun dipping. Going and he's going for that amazing.
Oh, I'm so like, glad that was not
like
ruined
if that,
for anybody.
Like, those were the little moments that just made comics so cool, like back then when things weren't so, you know, so revealed. But I think that the talk of the town, no matter, yes, it is with the Batman Who Laughs, but this is kind of like the book that a lot of people have been talking about, which is Batman Superman. I think that's one reason, because this title is back and this is a very, very popular title. The Batman Superman title, but this is with Joshua Williamson. David Marquez is making his debut with DC Comics, and I gotta say that he is a welcomed guest, because I mean, I adore his art. I don't know. I know sometimes our art styles in terms of preferences are a little bit different.
You don't like pretty. This is a pretty book. This is a very pretty book.
This is definitely a pretty book, and this is not something I would want ongoing if it was just Batman. Because
Are you serious?
Huh?
Are you serious? You wouldn't like this on an ongoing Batman title?
I don't know. It's just, I mean, I guess I can't. Like, I would prefer this more than Mora.
Okay, because look at page 10, if you can. Very first panel is like a panel of Batman. That's a pretty great.
Yeah, I like it, and I love them looking and kind of like the buildings. Like that's kind of like what I like. I like the roughness where the buildings, it looks like just smoke. Just it's all smuggy and foggy and in Gotham. No, I dig it. Like there's panels that here that I really do enjoy. I mean, don't get me wrong, but there's just something about when books just look a little too pretty. Like I wouldn't. I think when I was first into comics, I would say yeah. I would love Jim Lee on everything, but I wouldn't want Jim Lee on a Batman book. I just don't. Not anymore. I just don't. It's too stylized. But David Marquez, welcome edition. Thank you for coming. If anything, I would say that these are some of the cool things that I really love about Bendis coming is that Bendis is kind of bringing his buddies. And David Marquez, Alex Maleev. I mean, I hope that we get more Matt Fraction. Even though I'm pretty sure Fraction's only going to be doing that Jimmy Olsen. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. But what did you think overall about this comic?
This comic, let me just say, I was excited about this book. But once I read it, once it came the day to read it, by this time, by the time I sat down and opened this book, I already knew what the ending was going to be. I already know who all of the infected are. So the biggest pulls for this book and for this series have already been ruined for me, unfortunately. So I have to knock the book for that. And partially it is DC, because DC is the one that has put out so much information about the infected and how this book will go. So I didn't like that, and I have to say I didn't like some of the dialogue here. The back and forth between Superman and Batman, it's like, I know that with every number one, you have to assume that there is at least one new reader to comics.
Mm-hmm.
And Williamson was like, okay, I need to tell the origins of Superman and Batman in this one story, and you know, I have to tell the reader that Superman is different from Batman and Batman is different from Superman.
Well, I think it's also, I mean, we also got to remember that Williamson for now, I don't know, 4 years has been just writing Flash. So I think like there has to be a little bit of like let the guy learn the voice. But again, also, I think that it's, those are moments to, yeah, kind of show, yes, for the initiated, yes, we know the differences, but I kind of liked the, when Bruce is trying to test him, and he's like, well, I don't think like that. Like, yeah, I don't know why, I kind of, also with, sorry, that happened in Action Comics, with Lois asking Clark, well, did you scan Miss Leon? He's like, no, that's an invasion of her privacy. Like, I like that those are, like, he does those things. So, there were moments, like, I actually kind of like the test. Yes, I mean, that's a very Batman thingy to do, which is to kind of, I think he wanted to try to hit a nerve with Superman to see if he'll get any sort of a Batman who laughs, Superman who laughs in there. So, I actually didn't mind at all the little test that Bruce was trying to do because of that. Because I think, in a way, it kind of just shows the a little bit of the differences. Now, I know what you mean. Like, the inner dialogues were a little bit more wonky. I don't know if that's what you meant.
Well, yeah.
When you have, like, Bruce talking about Clark, but Clark is talking about Bruce. And, like, the inner dialogues, that one felt a little bit more forced, and I can see what you mean. But them actually talking to each other, I liked that back and forth.
Well, one little thing that I didn't like whatsoever is like the panel where they go to Crime Alley and Batman is like, Park Row, Crime Alley, where my parents died. Like, Clark is, depending on what continuity and, you know, how you really look at this, at this point, Bruce and Clark trust each other and know each other so well, you don't need to tell your basically best friend that your parents died here. Like, he knows.
Yeah, so those are for the uninitiated.
Yeah. But also, I didn't like how Batman was just like, because if you read any other Batman story with Crime Alley, this is a sacred place for Batman. And then he tells Superman, break it. Basically, he's just like, destroy it. Do whatever you need to. And with that hole, that is not a crime alley. That is a crime highway for that road to be that wide and Superman to put that big of a hole in it.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of nitpicking there, but I just thought it was funny that Superman was just like, okay, I'm just going to, you know, slam down here and we're going to go through here. We do find that this is the Batman Who Laughs Batcave. And it very much looks like Batman. It looks like Batman's Batcave if he listened to Slipknot his entire life and just shopped at Hot Topic.
What's wrong with that?
I mean, there's a lot of black and red. There's just a lot. But
yeah, he's got Wait and Bleed on repeat.
But, you know, they're talking here and they're, you know, they're still, I believe they're still going around the dialogue of like, if, you know, if I was a villain, you know, I wouldn't do this or wouldn't do that. What is he really planning? Talking about the Batman Who Laughs. And they find this chessboard, which I thought was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do tend to forget that the Batman Who Laughs is still Bruce Wayne with a skewed sense of reality, of course.
Yeah.
So he still has his brains, his smarts, his always one step ahead. We saw that in the Batman Who Laughs book. And even shows here that Superman is not all that, you know, just country farm. He's smart and he knows, you know, him and his dad played chess like every Sunday. And so he moved one of the chess pieces, he moved the knight, and it, you know, did this hologram basically showing, hey, any of these people can be under my control. And unfortunately, like I said in the beginning of this, they are so surprised, but at this point, I can already point out every single person who's infected.
Yeah, it's a bummer. It's really, it's unfortunate. And honestly, once I got to this part of the book, like, I just didn't care anymore, because I was like, I've read this already. I read this, like, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was like, you know what, let me just get to the end and see, is there, like, at least a splash page? And, you know, the cool splash page. The Shazam,
I dig it. Yeah. I forgot this artist.
David Marquez.
Marquez draws a very beautiful... Who's on colors also?
Alex Sinclair, I want to say.
Is it Sinclair?
Let me title page. Well, keep going with your thought. I'll find it.
It's on page...
Yeah, it's on page 8. I got it here. Alejandro Sanchez. So.
Okay. Sanchez's color is awesome.
Yep.
I just love how clean the Thunderbolt on the Shazam Who Laughs chest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love the way Superman looks. This whole thing just looks really, really awesome.
They really failed with the freaking lightning bolt. Yeah, it just looked like a huge light bulb. Like, it wasn't like, I don't know. Like, it looked like, you know how they say, like, practical is better?
Mm-hmm.
That would have looked a lot better CGI'd. I think so.
I mean,
you can't see, like, I'm like, even the Superman emblem, yes, you can tell that it's popping out of the chest. But when you look at Shazam's suit, it just looks like 6 inches off his chest. and it just looks like a huge light bulb. Like, I didn't like that part. That's the only problem I had with the suit when it came to Shazam. So I just didn't like the light. But seeing something like this, it looks so much better where it doesn't need to have that huge light. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But anyways, beautiful design.
But overall, you know, it says next Shazam Who Laughs. I believe that the reason why this book was delayed is because the artist changed. I don't know who we were getting beforehand. I'm sorry that you got knocked off of a job, but Marquez was great on this book. This will definitely make it worth it. Now, I will say I actually really enjoyed Joshua Williamson writing Batman in the Price crossover with The Flash. And yeah, I'm hoping that this book does get a little bit better. I know that he's learning these characters still. We didn't really talk about the flashback to the story about the Batman Who Laughs and how he got his powers and all that, because it does show on his Earth how he killed Superman. But still, overall, I could have enjoyed this book a little bit more if DC hadn't already ruined the ending and how this book is going to go as far as the Infected. But the book as is, love the art, wish the story could be a little bit better as far as dialogue. But so,
with this being said, because I don't remember who kind of recommended, but when we were wondering who's going to be the Batman writer, and I think someone has said Williamson, and I'm like, oh no, I would not want Williamson on Batman. From reading this comic, is this something where you can be like, you know what, I can see this writer maybe doing a Batman comic?
I could see him doing a Batman comic. I think that the biggest challenge he has is to juggling the two biggest DC giants in this book.
Yeah.
I think that is probably one of the hardest things to do in DC. So he does have a big challenge for this book. We don't know if this is a maxi series of 12 issues or if it's an ongoing.
Whatever the sales dictate.
Yeah.
I'm sure this issue will hit the over 100,000.
Yeah.
I think what happens is, what does number two do?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think I would have to get to at least issue 6 to know if he could write Batman.
Okay. No, I mean, that's fair. Obviously, you need a sample size. I was just curious, like, if this kind of, like, skewed anything here.
It does skew some things, just because, like I said, with the introduction to new readers of, oh, this is where my parents died, oh, you know, saying a lot of the most obvious stuff with Batman, you know, we kind of have to get past that to know if he really understands or not.
Yeah. So, reading Batman, The Curse of the White Knight, like, are you falling in love with John Paul again?
I am. I will tell you this, though. My favorite part of this book is the flashback. I love the flashbacks more than I love the story.
Dude,
right now.
The beginning of this book was so much fun.
Oh, it was so cool.
Dude, I really love this world. Turn this into the next Assassin's Creed game or something, please, because it's amazing.
Well, no, he already said that, when I say he, I'm talking about
Sean Murphy.
Yeah, Sean Murphy has already said that he was heavily inspired by Castlevania, the video game.
I see that.
And it's also a Netflix show. It's only 2 seasons. Each season is, I think, 4 episodes, so it's super short, but it has a lot of content. I highly recommend it. It is a rated, like, TVMA, I think, or NR-17 or whatever. It's still a really, really good show. All of this is awesome. If we could get this in a miniseries, I would enjoy it. I couldn't take this as like a, I don't think I could take this as a maxi series. Cause I feel like it might get a little too old, but for me, I was always a fan of Zorro. I am a huge fan of the Three Musketeers. So this entire genre is like just all for me. Yeah, okay. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care about... I mean, I've seen Zorro. Just because, I mean, who didn't see Antonio Banderas back in the day?
True.
I mean, jeez. I mean, have you seen him in Desperado? I mean, the guy's gorgeous. anyways. Yeah, so, I mean, like, that kind of stuff. I mean, I see it, but it's like, whatever. But I was, like... I'm saying the wrong name. It's not captivized? Am I saying it right?
Yeah.
Captivated. Yeah, captivated. I'm like, captivized? I forgot the word. Didn't know English there for a second. Yeah, because then it goes into the real time, and we know with the reveal where Bruce has been thinking of, hey, yeah, you know, I'm going to go ahead and tell people who my identity is. And we were introduced to... I believe it was Ruth. I don't think they ever said her last name. But she was kind of going to Bruce, kind of saying, I don't really think that's a good idea. And she kind of reminds me of a little bit of like an Amanda Waller, where she's like, you know what? I know who you are. Let me explain why you revealing who Batman is going to do horrible, horrible damage, not only to you, but to everybody that, you know, is close to you. So I liked it. And even though, like, you know, because of this whole Napier initiative, because now he's trying to bring it down. I think the reason why I really like this story is I love seeing Bruce, or I love seeing Batman and Commissioner Gordon at odds, because you never really see it. So seeing something where this is just kind of like a partnership that is most definitely fractured, and then you have Commissioner Gordon on this, you know, doing like his little speech in regards to being pro Napier initiative because of everything that was revealed, and then the Joker actually comes there, and I actually thought he was going to kill Gordon, because I mean, if you can kill Alfred in the first volume, I mean, there's no holds bar, you know, like I feel like anybody's. But, I mean, Gordon was able to fight it off, but once he's there and he's actually just laughing, he's like, listen here, you're just talking, I'm running for mayor, blah, 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 but I'm a cheating husband, I'm a terrible father. He's like, I'm just too stupid that I can't even realize that my own daughter's Batgirl. I was like, what the?
This was interesting. So, this entire book, but it's only been two issues, but we first... are revealed in the very ending of volume one that Batman tells Gordon who he is. In the very first issue, Batman is juggling whether or not he should tell the entire city or the world that he is Batman.
Yep.
And so instead of going that route immediately, they swerve it and they out Barbara immediately. I think that is very interesting.
Oh, for sure.
I think this will basically help Batman decide whether he should tell everybody or not.
Yes, I think that this does do something where it'll kind of maneuver it in the ways. But now the question is, do you think he will?
I think that
because it kind of makes me feel like Bruce might actually leave Barbara in the dust.
Ooh.
And she's actually going to have to, like, take this hit for... Because, again, her relationship and Dick's relationship with Bruce in this world is fractured as well. And I feel like no matter what's going to happen, John Paul Valley is going to end up making his presence known. And that's going to be more of a priority for Batman to have to handle and figure out, on top of the Joker being pretty much, like, the mastermind behind everything, that I feel like Barbara... going through all the crap that she's probably going to start going through, Batman just can't help her at that moment, which is only going to leave her to kind of like rust and have to deal with this on her own with the help of like Dick Grayson. But again, I mean, John Paul Valley has a couple of buddies, which it looks like, I don't know, Michael's Demolition, a sniper, and Gabriel.
Yeah. These are his war buddies.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's got some, you know, he's got some stuff there. And you saw the reaction with Jim saying, like, oh, you talk about trust, you do this, and here you are, you know, you're about to reveal. He's like, I think you should reveal yourself. And he's like, I think you should come out, Wayne. Then maybe Joker and the elites wouldn't have to, wouldn't have destroyed my little girl's life. So Oh, man, I'm curious, man. I really think that something's going to happen where this Bruce, who we already kind of know is, you know, he's rattled. And, you know, I will say one of my favorite parts in the first volume is I love the dynamic between Jack and the Harley.
Uh-huh.
And now seeing this twist that, hey,
oh,
Harley's
yeah.
pregnant.
She got that baby bump.
Yes, I totally bought it in this one, and I don't mind it. Like, if I saw the Harley in the main continuity, even though, I mean, she's and she kind of, or maybe her solo title is not.
Yeah, I've always heard that there's two Harley Quinns. Her main title is out of continuity, and her persona in Suicide Squad is in continuity.
Okay, so with that kind of being said, I am totally for, like, this kind of Harley. And I like this. And so seeing this wrinkle, I'm really curious to see what it's going to do. And honestly, if I could get this as a commission, that panel standing right after with John Paul Valley, with his...
I'm pretty sure he had black and white prints of this when he was first drawing it up that he was giving out at his...
Oh, I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous, and I love it kind of just reminds me of everything that happened, like, post-Nightfall, where you're seeing just how calculated John Paul Valley really is, and now that he's got another set of his own pretty much special op studs, this is, you know, their calculated attack against Batman really shows that he's up for it, and it doesn't hurt, and it doesn't help that he's, in this book, he's more alone than he's ever been. Because now, I mean, at least in the other one, he still at least had help from a Harley. But now she's pregnant. He had help from a Barbara, but Barbara's going to have her own crap. And who knows where we have Rich. Richard. I was going to say Rick. A dick. Rick.
Don't put that name in here.
Yeah, Rick. Sorry. I mean, yeah, you look at Wayne Manor. I mean, it freaking blew up. So, I love the band. I mean, it's, I don't even know if this is a hot take, but I mean, I'm loving the White Knight series more than what I'm reading from Batman in main continuity right now.
Oh yeah, I really enjoy this. We do get like three pages, black and white, of preview pages of what is to come in the next issue. My only complaint is that they would have only given us one page, so that way we could have still gotten 2 to 3 pages of this story still. Because there's one panel that is completely black, or one page that is completely black, and then the three preview pages. If they would have only
I wonder if these are actual prints, or are these maybe like...
Well, it says here, next issue, black and white art, for Batman Curse of the White Knight, #3 by Sean Murphy.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, these books probably don't get the preview stuff that, you know, that the others do.
Yeah.
So these are probably going to be the pages that you see, you know, on that Tuesday, like the previews before the book gets released. So I'm hoping that these would be the same pages. Because what would suck is that we've seen these, then they release 3 or 4 preview pages from another title, and now you have seen already about 15%, 20% of a book. So let's hope that's the case. But, I mean, it's gorgeous just to see just the natural, like the originals and the state that it's in. Because those are some beautiful inks, man. And I would love to see Murphy's art just like, do it. Give us a Noir version.
Yes, a absolute black and white. That would be so good.
Give it to me. So... I love the man. I think that I'm loving this title. I never would have thought. I mean, yes, I've enjoyed like Punk Rock Jesus by Murphy, what he's done with Snyder with, I believe it was The Wake. Loved it. So I mean, clearly he's a really good storyteller, but I didn't think I was going to enjoy another Batman series, but I would have also never have thought that this would be my favorite from everything that I'm reading of Batman. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That's going to wrap it up, man. We've talked a lot.
It's good to see you,
man. It's been like two weeks.
I know, but I will say we have improved. We did 5 books today, and it's only an hour and 16 minutes. When we talk 4 books, and it's already like an hour and 30. So
Now, one thing that I did screw up on, I'm going to have to tell Jake. I'm like, hey, Jake, you know what? Just fast forward to an hour 17. I actually forgot to say thank you to Jake for... I mean, I did thank him that day, but, you know, you should also give him kudos. So, yes, thank you at Beekeeper Jake. Thank you. I appreciate for you filling in for Clay. But, Clay, it's always great to have you back, buddy. And where can they find you?
You guys can always find me on Twitter, of course. That being... at Fanboy Clay and at Fanboy Comics Pod. I am slowly planning for that podcast to be back up. And I do have an announcement that I am going to just throw on to Mark right now about Fanboy Comics Pod. It is going to stay on the Legion Network, on the Nation of Nerds Network, but I'm actually going to give Anchor a try for that podcast.
Did you figure out how to do it?
Yeah, so it is just a normal website. The only thing, the only reason why I don't necessarily recommend it for us as the Legion is that the episode that you put down, I think it's like the first 10 episodes or whatever, first 5 episodes, it actually doesn't disperse to everyone immediately. It'll take a couple weeks for it to finally go to like Google and iTunes and all that stuff. So we would lose a lot of our listeners. But I want to go ahead and make the announcement now so that way when I do announce that Fanboy Comics is coming back, that you guys go ahead and download Anchor because you can send me voice messages on there. I can add them to the podcast. We're going to get really interactive with it, and so I'm really wanting to get that back up and running. So it's going to be really fun.
Sweet. And we have an announcement as well. We actually just finished releasing... Well, today is Thursday, the 29th, but yesterday, on the 28th, Jake and I were actually doing a new podcast, which is the Fantasy Football Legion, where, I mean, one thing that we talk a lot about on our chats is we love sports. We have a lot of, I mean, it's kind of funny that it just so happens to be that I think everybody on our chat are diehard sports fans. And I never would have expected that because it's, you know... The mutual between hardcore sports fan and comic book fan, I've kind of noticed that within my mutuals, you don't get much of it. So it's actually great to see. And I love fantasy football. I love football. And so does Jake. So we're actually going to be doing a fantasy football podcast where you guys can check out weekly. This Sunday, I don't know, I think that's September 1st, we're actually going to be doing a live fantasy football draft. So we're going to be doing a draft on our own respective league that we're in together. And then within that league, we're actually going to be talking about draft strategy and why we're picking up these kind of people and why we, you know, whatever. We're giving our opinions and our advice in regards to fantasy football. And that's something that you'll be able to listen to as well on the Comic Book Legion chat. Well, on this network here. So yeah, go ahead and check us out.
That's really cool. And I played a lot of sports when I was a kid. I'm still a very big fan.
Don't try to justify your lack of sports fandom.
Well, no, but that's the thing. I don't know anything as of today because I've kind of just unfortunately kind of dropped the ball, pun intended, on all of that stuff. But
Kawhi doesn't miss you. Just go back. You have LaMarcus Aldridge.
For me, honestly, I'm a very nostalgic kind of, you know, when it comes to sports and stuff. So Spurs, to me, I literally do not know anybody on that team anymore. Literally.
Well, hey, you're getting Tim Duncan back on the bench with the coaches. But now, become like this hippie Muay Thai UFC MMA guy with dreads. I love it. I don't know what happened to Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan's never showed personality in 30 years.
I've met Tim Duncan once at a signing at our local comic book shop because we had a cover made for us where it was a Punisher book. But here in San Antonio, Tim Duncan actually has a car shop called the Blackjack. And he actually made a car for the Punisher. And he is like handing the keys to the Punisher. And you see all of the national championship rings on Tim Duncan's hand. It's actually kind of cool.
Nice. Sweet. So it's okay, man.
Yeah. But what I was going to say is I'm very enthusiastic about listening to the Fantasy League. podcast, learning some things, and quite possibly for next season, going to hopefully know something to be able to actually play fantasy football with you guys.
I'm going to call you every Sunday and make sure you're watching NFL.
If you tell me you're hanging out
with your wife, then I'm gonna cut the whole network.
I will at least try to listen to highlights, because I do work a 8-hour shift on majority of my Sundays.
I forgive you. All right. So with that being said, thank you all for give us a follow at CB_Legion on our Twitter page. Go follow our website, comicbooklegion.com. If you're interested in being a contributor, hook us up. You can message me at Mark Reads Comics or at Fanboy Clay or the CB_Legion, or give us, you can email us at comicbooklegion@gmail.com. On top of that, go ahead, follow, Clay and his podcast at Fanboy Comics, us here, Comic Book Legion or Fantasy Football Legion. Am I forgetting anything?
No, I mean, if they want to follow you, where can they find you?
Oh, Mark Reads Comics. Oh, thank you. I've plugged myself like 4 times today. Thank you. All right. So with that being said, we'll talk to you guys later. See you later.
Peace out.